So we're very fortunate that there's a lot of research going on to work out how best to manage human health in space. So I'm just going to give you a brief outline of NASA's human research program, and that looks at the risks of humans being in space. It has a very detailed research plan and what's called the Human Research Roadmap, which outlines the 33 key issues for human health and performance in space. There are a number of locations where research is carried out and also a number of analog sites. So the key purpose of the Human Research Program is to look at how to optimise the health of the crew and their performance in space. Risk reduction is really important, and you want to look at how you can actually mitigate, reduce or prevent these serious risks. And we also want to develop countermeasures to try to offset the problems that develop with human physiology in space. The risks are very varied, but they include environmental hazards, and I've mentioned a few of these earlier. So there's several different types of radiation, the altered gravitational environments, and also just the hostile and extreme environments that are encountered either in space or on other celestial bodies. And of course, being in space, there are very unique challenges in terms of how we support the health of astronauts, how we look after their health and provide medical services, and also the human factors aspects, so the interaction between astronauts, the interaction between astronauts and ground control, and the mental or psychological health problems which can develop in space. So the Human Research Program includes the Integrated Research Plan, and it has six key elements. So the first one is behavioural health and performance, then looking at the medical capability aboard an expedition, looking at human health and countermeasures, so building on the things that I've talked about earlier. There are always a number of medical projects going on with the International Space Station. Human factors and habitability, so not only the interaction between the crew, but also the actual livability of the environment that they're in, and the effects of space radiation. The Human Research Roadmap is essentially a web interface which brings all of this together. So if we add all those aspects together, we have the 33 key issues for human health and performance in space falling out the bottom. And these can loosely be grouped into six major categories. The environmental risks, which are toxic to humans, the interaction between people, mechanical devices and technology, the impacts on our musculoskeletal system, adverse health effect risks, food and nutrition risks, and psychosocial risks. So just starting off with the environmental risks, cosmic radiation exposure is a very serious issue, and at the moment it's one for which we have no solution. These are extremely high velocity particles which basically pass through everything, and they can have an adverse effect on our nervous system, on our heart, and also lead to the development of cancer. And during solar particle events, there can also be quite severe acute radiation syndromes if astronauts are left unprotected. There's also risks from celestial dust exposure. We don't really know what's in celestial dust, and there's certainly the possibility that it could be toxic to astronauts or could be carrying all sorts of organic compounds. There's also a risk of decompression sickness because there are changes between different barometric pressure environments, so inside the spacecraft, into airlocks, into the spacesuits, and then back again. And we also need to think about what happens to medications, their pharmacodynamics and pharmacokinetics, and also food in terms of nutrition in the space environment, if that works differently and how it works differently. Turning to the risks of people interacting with equipment or with technology, this goes right back to the start of the mission design process. And I'm sure we can think of a lot of ways that even in our everyday life that we interact with technology and with devices that make life easier for us. And it won't be any different for astronauts, and they'll in fact be a lot more dependent on technology for their very survival. We also need to think about training in terms of are people adequately trained to use equipment and technology. What can go wrong if they're not properly trained, or they forget their training, or they haven't run a drill for a while? And also just in terms of the livability and the ability to provide life support. There's also the possibility of injury, as I mentioned earlier, from EVA operations. And there's documented changes in astronauts' ability to manage their spacecraft and perform simple operations when they suddenly go back into a gravitational environment. And of course, they can be injured by heavy things just the same as we can on Earth. I've given you an outline earlier on the sort of problems that can develop with our bones and muscles as a result of exposure to microgravity, and the effects of orthostatic intolerance. And of course, if you get taller in space and your discs relax in space, when you come back to gravity, the converse is going to happen, and they're going to get squashed again, which could also potentially develop into discomfort or pain. There are a number of key adverse health risks which NASA has identified. So it's probably not surprising that if you get sick in space, it's going to affect your ability to perform. There's also interaction between the astronauts and the microorganisms in the space environment. So we all have microorganisms on us, and we tend to pass those around. And there's also a range of potential microorganisms, bacteria, fungi, viruses, parasites that could play a role. With our altered immune response, we're more prone to get sick. And there's also a possibility of cardiac rhythm problems, kidney stones, as I mentioned earlier, and the changes in vision which can occur. Food and nutrition risk is probably a really big one because of the limited range of nutrition that we can actually provide to astronauts in space, particularly if you're on a long duration mission and it's not like the International Space Station. You can bring fresh fruit and vegetables up very often. And if you haven't got the nutrients that you need, it can adversely affect your performance and your health. Psychological risks are really important and very real. I'm sure you can all imagine that if you're confined in a very small space with a very small number of people for an extended period of time, there's a lot of potential for risks of things like mental health problems in individuals, disputes and hostility between people, inability to work together. So that's something that NASA is very concerned about and working hard on, and the analog sites are helping a lot with that sort of research. Also, sleep is very difficult in space. You lose the normal circadian rhythm, and as I mentioned earlier, there are a whole host of factors related to interactions between people and between people in their environment. There are a number of locations in the US where they carry out human research program research at the major space centres, and also a research consortium called the National Space Biomedical Research Institute, and of course analog sites. I'm just briefly going to mention a number of the NASA analog sites. So these are the main ones. This is the first one. It's a modular habitat, which is very suitable for locking people up for a little while and seeing what happens, so useful for behavioural and expedition type research. Bed rest studies have been found to be quite useful in terms of simulating what happens in a microgravity environment, and particularly looking at things like the effect on our muscles and bones, what it's like to be confined for a long period and not able to do other things that you might like to do, and also experimenting with countermeasures against these sort of problems. And I think people who volunteer to do bed rest studies are very, very brave. I don't think it would be much fun having to lie head down on a bed for a month or longer. Antarctic studies. We're very fortunate in Australia. We have the Antarctic Division that actually carries out analogue research and contributes to NASA's research program. But NASA also has its own Antarctic studies. And Antarctica is probably the most isolated and extreme environment on Earth that we could send people into. So it's a very, very good analogue for what actually happens in space. So not surprisingly, these studies focus on what it's like to be in an extreme isolated environment for extended periods, the use of telemedicine to look after healthcare, and how people actually react to harsh environments. They also have an underwater centre, which is called NEMO, and they use that for short duration missions, and this very closely resembles the ISS, and their very structured research programs are carried out by both the crew and the researchers who are observing or interacting with them. And the crew members are actually able to go outside and simulate what it's like to perform tasks in space, or, for instance, if they were trying to do something out on an asteroid. There's also an altitude chamber which can simulate the space environment with different pressures, lighting, and a variety of other conditions. And that's quite useful looking at life support systems and, once again, the physiological and psychological effects of confinement. And what the researchers tend to do is that they'll deliberately limit their contact with the crew and the intervals at which the crew is resupplied, because they want to make it mimic a real mission as much as possible. And finally, there's a site way out in the desert which has very useful parallels in terms of it's a very arid, dry climate, which is very rocky, very harsh winds, and it also is lucky enough to have a meteor crater as well. And a number of research programs carried out there. People wander around in spacesuits and test how easy or difficult it is to perform certain tasks. They also practice driving vehicles over rocky terrain. And it's also an opportunity to work on remote communication, how well that works, and also prepare people for astrogeology research. So that's the end of that presentation. So thank you again for listening.